Well, hello, beautiful people. I know. Let's address the elephant in the room before we go any further. Where have I been? And I'm gonna keep this brief because I know that this is not what we came here for. This is not a personal confessional, but I definitely feel like I owe a bit of an explanation because I kind of fell off these last couple of weeks, and I've not been putting out content on my weekly, not weekly, excuse me, on my regular cadence that I normally do, not just on this particular audio platform, but just across all channels. Like, I really have been radio silent. And the truth is, 2024 thus far has been a whirlwind, some good, some bad. A lot of things just happened to me at the onset of the year that I was not expecting. And, maybe one day we'll talk about that in detail, but I don't want to bore you. But let's just say a lot of stuff happened that I didn't have in the cards this year, and certainly not at the top of the year. And I've been working through that, just trying to get my real life, my analog life in order. And that means that my digital footprint has taken a position on the back burner right now while I'm figuring all that out. And I am happy to say, knock on wood, don't want to jinx it, but feel like I'm in a good place in my analog life right now. And I've missed you all deeply. On top of the fact that I just had some unexpected things happen this year, also, I have been, and I don't think I'm alone in this sentiment at all. Like the few times that I've popped into Beyoncé's internet just to see what everybody is talking about, a lot of people are on this time as well. So I'm definitely not alone here, but just assessing my relationship with social media and just the digital space in general, and how much time I'm interacting with the phone versus the real life, tangible world that's right in front of me. I want to shift my priorities to be more present in the real world than I have been in probably the last couple of years, to be honest. I think definitely with the pandemic Lovato, I have prioritized non-in-person relationships. I don't know why I said non-in-person relationships. Like, what the hell is that? But you guys know what I mean. Like, relationships that exist primarily through devices, because that's been reality for the last couple of years. And I just kind of sank into that. On top of the fact that I tend to be kind of an introvert anyway. So if there's anyone who's susceptible to putting a wall between themselves and the outside world, it's probably me. I love people, but I like to go into my own cocoon every now and then. So I've just kind of leaned on that, and for a while it was sufficient, but I realized that it's not anymore, and I realized that what's happening out here in the real world is really what I should prioritize. And I am working on finding a good balance between doing things in the digital space and then also being present in the linear space where I can reach out and touch people and make real world connections and have, just that tangible interaction that you cannot have in these digital spaces. I'm just trying to figure out a healthy balance between the two because there's so much connectivity in the digital world and talking to people out there in the universe that I might not otherwise have the opportunity to meet. And I definitely cherish and appreciate that. So I don't want to lose that, but I also don't want to have it at the expense of the quality of the relationships in my real life. So I've been doing a lot of soul searching about how to find that delicate balance, been reading a lot of books. I just finished a book that's fairly well known by Cal Newport called Digital Minimalism. I highly recommend it. Is the information in there groundbreaking? No, but it's nice to see all the ideas that I've been having about my digital footprint and how to optimize it and not go overboard and have a healthy balance. Like, it's been nice to see all of that wrapped up in a pretty little bow in the form of a cohesive book. So, highly recommend if you're anything like me, if that's something that's been on your mind this year, give it a go. Try the audiobook or, do what I did and get the Kindle version, get the paperback if you want to kick it old school. But yeah, that's kind of where I've been lately. So, it's a mix of personal life and just some philosophical conundrums. So,
pretty much a normal day in my world. So yeah, you didn't ask for all that life update, but I gave it to you anyway because I feel like I owe you guys an explanation for where I've been. And I might be fashionably late, but is there any other way to show up? Because even though we're at the tail end of it, today's episode is all about this very, very influential black designer who absolutely needs some respect put on his name. And right before we close out Black History Month here in the United States, where I'm currently based, we are going to talk about him because I feel like he did not get his flowers in the wake of his passing. He's no longer with us. And I feel like he's been largely forgotten in the realm of fashion. I mean, black people's contributions to fashion have been forgotten largely in general, which we can have a whole episode devoted to that one day. But I want to be productive with this and I don't really want to rant. I want to shine a light on the things that I do like instead of kind of hyper-focusing on what I don't like because I think we've done that the last few episodes. So let's switch up the vibe. Let's switch up the energy, okay? And before we close out Black History Month, we're going to talk about a black figure in fashion who I think is absolutely fascinating and gone too soon. Would have loved to see what he ended up doing if he had lived a longer life, but nonetheless, he made his mark and we're going to talk about it. And by now, you'll know who I'm talking about because his name will be in the title of this episode. But I am talking about none other than the premier designer, the father of streetwear, if I do say so myself, Willie Smith, founder of the clothing brand Willie Wear. So Willie Smith is a black American, was, excuse me, was a black American designer from Philadelphia, born in 1948, and he always had a penchant for the arts. He was always artistically inclined, and he got his foot in the door through his grandmother, believe it or not, who one of her clients, she was a housekeeper, and one of her clients as a housekeeper knew the couturier at the time, Arnold Skassi. It's actually funny when I went back and just looked at Willie Smith's entire story just to pick up on any details that I didn't already know. There were so many names mentioned in there that have largely been forgotten, even just, race aside. There's so many names in fashion that we just don't talk about anymore. And I know fashion is inherently thinking about what's the next big thing, but it's actually kind of shocking and disheartening how much we just let people fall by the wayside after a couple of seasons have gone by. It's, we really should spend some more time focusing on the past. And I say this as someone who is a proud futurist and like fully identify as a futurist, not that sentimental, not really into going back in time, but I see the importance of history. And even if you don't want to romanticize it, at least studying it and acknowledging it goes a long way. So while I was going through these names, some of them, I'm like, wow, I don't even think I've heard anyone bring this person up in all the years that I've been in this industry. And it's kind of crazy. But that's neither here nor there. So couturier Arnold Skassi was someone who gave Willie an internship. Arnold Skassi gave Willie Smith an internship, and he was accepted to Parsons on a scholarship in 1965. 2 years later, though, he was expelled from Parsons, and the rumor has it that he was expelled after it was found out that he had a romantic relationship with another male student, which in 2024 sounds crazy. That sounds like a crazy thing to expel someone for, especially if we're both in college, we're both of legal age, we're both consenting adults, and we want to do the forbidden dance with each other. It's crazy that an institution would expel you for that. That's not an academic violation. That's not a disciplinary violation. Like, it's just a personal choice of how you want to live your life and what you're attracted to. And the fact that an institution could allegedly kick you out of school for that in New York City in the 60s at a fashion school where there's probably a lot of people who are fluid in that way. Like, kind of crazy to think about, and that wasn't that long ago, but that's the word on the street that Willie got expelled because of his
consensual relationship with a student of the same sex. And while I'm sure that was a blow to Willie Smith's trajectory and what he had planned for himself, it didn't slow him down. He just ended up collaborating with people in the burgeoning Soho art scene and did a lot of things that are super prevalent now that seem like commonplace ideas that you would have as a designer, but that were really groundbreaking back then. So Willie used to work closely with creatives all around the New York art scene. He was commissioned to do pieces for Alvin Ailey's dance company. He commissioned artists to do video installations for his fashion shows. He even collaborated on a t-shirt with Keith Haring. So all of this sounds super common, but was completely unheard of in its heyday. You know, when you think about something like a collab, that is, in my opinion, I think we're overdoing it with the collabs, to be honest. I think we're all collabed out. But going back to the 70s and 80s, when all of this started coming about, that was not a thing. Like, he was entering new territory in the apparel business, the fashion business, by collaborating with other people. Back in those days, your maison was your maison. Maison, for those who may not know, is just French for house, which is how people have referred to their fashion brands in the past. They've referred to them as the maison. So I go back and forth. Sometimes I say maison, sometimes I say house, sometimes I say brand, but they all kind of mean the same thing interchangeably. But no one was collaborating with multiple maisons at that time. Like, you weren't bringing an artist to come in and commission them to do any special designs with your line. Like, this is your maison and no one else may come in here. That was very much how things were back then. So for Willie to buck tradition and do what he wanted to do, he was a trendsetter. He was a trailblazer for sure. So the gig that paid his bills, presumably after he was expelled from Parsons, came about in 1969 when he became the head designer for a sportswear brand called Digits. The line had a very distinct look under Willie's path, or his creative direction rather, and it featured very bold prints, flowy high-waisted pants, and a very shocking, influential marketing campaign at the time that featured women modeling the garments on the gritty, dirty streets of New York City. And mind you, this is New York City in the late 60s going into the 70s. And it was not a pretty place. It was very gritty, not at all kind of like the polished version of itself that we have today. So it was not the type of image that a fashion brand would have projected back then. It was not giving stylish. It was not giving sophisticated or sexy. And to have clothing juxtaposed with the backdrop of New York was an idea that no one else really had at that time. And Willie was definitely a forward-thinking person to think about doing a campaign like that. Because now, again, I'm going to sound like a broken record for the duration of this podcast episode, because so much of this stuff we take for granted in fashion because everyone does it now. But Willie is the one who first took the plunge to do a lot of these conceptual ideas. Having women model your clothes on the dirty, filthy New York streets, today that would be like 101, you know, creative 101. But no one was thinking to do that, and it made Willie's designs stand out, and it made him stand out as someone who stood apart from the pack. You know, while everybody is looking at Paris as the beacon and the end-all be-all of fashion and wanting to emulate Parisian style as much as possible, which, keep it a buck, people are still doing now. Like, there are still so many people who think that high-end, couture-level Parisian French fashion is what we should all strive to be looking like. And Willie was one of the first people to openly say, I don't want to design for that lady who lunches. You know, one of his quotes was, I don't design clothes for the queen, but for the people who wave at her as she goes by. So he was very much comfortable with the idea of being a designer of the people from a very, very early start in his career. And he didn't feel shame in the fact that the everyday woman was wearing his clothing. he actually looked at it as a source of pride. And when I went back and looked at different articles about Willie and what people were saying about him who knew him back then, they would say things like he would be so overjoyed when he would see a, not regular in a pejorative negative way, but like a regular working class person out in the street wearing one of his garments. Like he would light up and tell his friend, like, look over there, that person's wearing my coat, or that person's wearing those pants, and like, look how they're styling it, that's so cool. He viewed the working man, or rather the working woman wearing his clothing, as a source of pride and joy, and he was honored to be in their closets. He was not trying to shy away from the fact that he doesn't design for the 1% or for that ethereal model figure that 99% of women do not look like. He was perfectly okay with being the everyday woman's designer at a time when that was frowned upon. And to give you some more context around that, not only was Willie okay with designs that were accessible, he also didn't mind his price points being accessible as well. So he was priced far more competitively than a lot of contemporaries at that time who were, again, still caught up in the hype of, I want to be something like a French designer. Like that is still aspirational for most of the people in this field. And so everything, marketing, editorial content, the cuts, the drapes, the price points, all of that is catering to this ideal. The fashion industry as a whole didn't even really catch on to the idea of making more accessibly priced clothing until really the end of the 80s, because the 80s was still a very, very opulent time. And then we did have the stock crash of 1987, where we start to see the rise of what used to be called bridge lines. I don't really believe that anyone in the industry uses the term bridge anymore, but bridge lines were meant to literally bridge the gap between that customer who likes those designer labels, but who either doesn't want to or doesn't have the ability to pay that price. So these designs were, for example, DKNY. Donna Karan is the full high price pointed brand, and then DKNY is the bridge line, or also known as the diffusion line, or like a CK by Calvin Klein. Calvin Klein was, of course, the more expensive collection in the Calvin Klein portfolio. And then CK by Calvin Klein is the bridge. It's the diffusion. It's the more accessible price point. And designers were high key ashamed of having diffusion and bridge lines and didn't want to call it out in marketing and didn't want to plaster it all over the place that they had bridge lines. And the fashion industry turned up its nose at bridge lines, even though they were very profitable for a time. But they were looked at as, I believe, I can't remember the name of the designer, but one designer called the bridge line collections in the department store the bastard area of the department store. So there are so many people in the industry who turned up their nose at the concept of a bridge line, at the concept of something that's accessible, affordable. And this is, long after Willie Smith had already put his stake in the ground and said, hey, I'm totally okay with this being my lane and just, driving in this lane until I decide I don't want to anymore. So he really was moving to the beat of his own drum, and I cannot overstate that. Okay, back to the chronological timeline of Willie Smith. So 2 years after he signed on to be part of the design team at Digits, he ended up being the youngest nominee for the CODI Award, which was at the time basically the Oscars of fashion. And he actually did end up winning in 1983 after he was nominated for the fifth time. But again, showing you his impact, the youngest nominee for the CODI Award at the time. That's a really, really big deal, especially to be black and gay, kicked out of Parsons, and to be a designer of the people. Big, big deal. By 1974, the economy was not doing so hot, and Digits, the brand that Willie was the head designer for, had filed for bankruptcy. And so, thinking about his next move, he was invited on a trip to India with a friend who was sourcing fabrics for tunics.
And there he ended up constructing a pair of pants that went, I'm hesitant to say that went viral, but for the time, it ended up having a lot of popularity and traction, and it was enough to give Willie the idea to actually create his own business and launch Willie Wear in 1976. Willie Wear ended up being a commercial success, and beyond just the fact that the price points were accessible, because again, this is someone who's perfectly okay with being a designer of the people, who has no interest in being aspirational. And by now, you all know what aspirational means in this context, so I don't need to explain. Willie did not care about signaling those things. But beyond the price point, his designs were very forgiving and very flattering, and as a result, people who had a myriad of different body types could comfortably wear his clothes, which was a huge factor in the saleability of it all. At the height of Willie Wear's popularity, Willie's brand was sold across 500 stores internationally and was grossing $25 million. I don't know how much that is when adjusting for inflation, but if you had a business today that did $25 million and was available in 500 doors as a fashion designer, I would pat you on the back and say, good job. So I can only imagine a few decades ago how much crazier that would have been. So just to give you an idea, because I always say, you know, the numbers don't lie. I can sit up here and on my soapbox and give you a diatribe, but like the numbers are what they are. Unfortunately, the trajectory of Willie Wear was cut short because on a trip to India to source fabrics, Willie Smith did develop a bacterial infection, and subsequently passed on from a battle with pneumonia. And it was only later revealed after an autopsy was done on his body that he was also battling AIDS, which no one, not even his closest friends, knew at the time. So I'm not sure if Willie himself knew about it and chose not to disclose, which I completely understand, or if he himself had no idea. But like many people of the time, unfortunately, he passed rather quickly from complications from not only the bacterial infection, but from AIDS-related complications as well. And he was only 39 years old, and Willie Wear had only been in business a short time. It was founded in 1976 and he passed away in 1987. So, a very short amount of time for a business to get off the ground and for his clothing to be available in so many doors and to gross upwards of $25 million. I can only imagine what the brand would have gone on to do if there had been more time with Willie at the helm. And it's unfortunate because after Willie passed on, his business partner did try to keep the doors open. She hired designer Andre Walker after Willie's passing to take over the reins. And they even opened new boutiques and did everything they could to keep the business thriving. But very shortly after he passed away, he passed again in 1987. And by 1990, the business had shuttered and it was no longer. So really, Willie was the lifeblood of that business, and without him at the helm, they just couldn't survive. And, you know, let's just address the elephant in the room. It's an incredibly tragic story of someone whose life was cut very short at a time when many creatives' lives were cut very short, and there's no sugarcoating that. But the takeaway here is not to just simply mourn, but to also appreciate what a visionary Willie was. And I really, really want to hammer home the very true belief that without Willie, I don't see how we have a lot of the modern day takes that we have today in the world of fashion, that we take for granted now. Because again, they're so ubiquitous, everyone does it, that you kind of get lulled into this sense of, well, this is the way it's always been. But no, with everything, no matter how ubiquitous, no matter how commonplace it is, somebody always had to be the first. And I for sure think that Willie Smith deserves the term father of streetwear. His 1983 autumn winter collection was literally called Street Couture. Sounds like something anyone could come up with today, but in 1983, no one was putting the street and couture
into the same sentence, let alone naming an entire collection after that concept. This is groundbreaking stuff for the time. In lieu of working with socialites, Willie took to the creatives in the Soho art scene. He took to the streets. He commissioned people to do installations. He would have people do performance art at his fashion shows. He collaborated with street artists. He worked with dance companies on their apparel for their performances. Like, he really was mainly fixated on real world people and people who were really creating art that he respected and valued, and didn't care about being accepted by high society, and didn't look at his designs as any less than if they weren't accepted by high society, which most designers did not have that sentiment at the time. There were a lot of people back then, and even now, who feel like, okay, even if my items are in 500 doors, if it's not these key doors, it isn't worth a damn. You know, if I'm not in Bergdorf's, or at the time there were some niche boutiques that don't exist anymore, like Charivari comes to mind. That was a very popular boutique in New York. You know, if I'm not at Saks or any of those sorts of institutions, then my designs aren't worthy. Willie didn't care about all of that at all. Without him, we don't have streetwear. We don't have designers and brands that don't care if their items are in Bergdorf's, that don't care if they are worn by a certain socialite, or I guess today, you know, certain influencers or whatever is the equivalent of that today. We don't get that. People like Virgil Abloh or Telfar Clemens, they don't exist without Willie Smith laying the foundation for them. That's my hot take. You guys know practically every episode I have a hot take. That is mine. We don't get Virgil. We don't get Telfar. We don't get Pharrell. We don't get a Kanye. Designer Kanye. I'm not talking about Kanye and all the other shenanigans. And so many other people who I can't even think of. We don't get that without Willie Smith. We don't even get, you know, rappers and black celebrities creating their own clothing lines, which I think now we have too many celebrities in that space in general. You guys know how I feel about that. But at one point in time when it was a little bit more niche, think about like maybe the early 2000s, Y2K era, that was really, really cool. And that was a time when people were perfectly fine with being segmented and didn't really care if their stuff wasn't in a certain store or in certain locales. That's when everyone was okay with being like, hey, this design resonates with these people over here, and I'm perfectly okay with that. And you have, you know, a Jay-Z who sold Rockaware for hundreds of millions of dollars. You don't get that without someone like Willie Smith forging that path. And it's really a shame that he's been largely forgotten from the landscape. I mean, there are so many black people who don't get their just due in the fashion industry in general. But even just from a cultural standpoint, there are so many people who it would do them good to know who Willie Smith was and to study him and to just familiarize themselves with how he carved out a lane for this whole new wave of clothing designers and creatives that wouldn't have had that outlet probably at this time if he wasn't there to do what he did. And before we close out Black History Month for the year of 2024, even though there's never a bad time to celebrate blackness, you guys, in case you're wondering, before we close this chapter out, I definitely wanted to come on here and talk about Willie Smith, give him his flowers posthumously, because he really is the grandfather of a lot of what we have in front of us today. And especially with art and creative things and endeavors, it's so hard to make sure that the originators and the founders of things get their just due, because it's so hard to pinpoint who did things first in general. And there's so many parts of fashion that are segmented and cornered off, and there's not really a true archive of everything in an accessible place where we can all find it. So I think a lot of us just accept streetwear as the norm and don't really stop to think about where it got started, where it got its footing. And I wanted to shed some light on that today, because it's such a big part of the fashion industry now.
I would argue that streetwear has eclipsed just general ready-to-wear and certainly haute couture for several years now. So it is the cash cow of so many of these businesses. And they all have Willie Smith to thank, in my opinion. And that's it for me, folks. Again, I love you guys so much, and I'm so, so sorry for the delay. Life has been lifing, and it's very hard to be in two places at once. It's hard to show up on digital and also show up, you know, in the linear space in my real life. So bear with me. This is, you know, a ship that is sailing, and sometimes the ship gets taken off course, or sometimes we have to dock the boat for a little while, but you know, we're always in this thing together, and I love you deeply. Thanks so much for rocking with me, and I'll see you on the internet. Bye.